Sports Radio 92.9 A Game. It's the morning shift. I'm Mike. She's Allie. He's Bo. And he's Dylan. Actually playing some good tunes on the way into this 8 o'clock hour, man. Appreciate you guys so much for hanging out with us. Beautiful weather on the way into work. Appreciate you guys taking us along for the ride. I got to tell you, we got a bunch to get to. We're going to do the wake-up call here in just a minute. 404-726-0929. Some of the topics. What are the worst household chores? Would you rather do laundry or unload the dishwasher for the rest of your life?
Endless. It's endless.
You can throw endless, like some people cutting the grass, oof, you know, vacuuming. Just throw it all out.
Dusting
there.
Is just the worst, right? Throw. Like sweeping, dusting.
Yeah. Anyways, also, what would you rather see on the Falcons, on Falcons game day to open the season? A turnover forced by the defense or a drive resulting in a touchdown by the offense? Get with us, 404-726-0929.
Which one of those do you think that the fans would rather see? I know we're going to have a call, like right off, like before we go to the calls, which one do you think, that the touchdown of the defense? Because the point of contention for this team for years has been defense, it feels like.
And that's why I was like, can I pick the turnover? Okay, if I can pick the turnover and it's a strip sack, then yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. I think fans would lose their mind. If it's like, you know, a throw across the middle gets tipped by Caden Ellis and intercepted by Jesse, it's like, yeah, that's fine. But, you know, I'd probably rather see the Falcons offense come up and operate at a high level and Michael Penix makes throws over the middle and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because you've seen one.
Yeah.
You haven't seen that other one. You have, but you don't feel like it's something you've seen. But the reason why I went with the offense is because I just feel like, you know, with Penix only making his fourth start, we didn't see him in the preseason, Wilkinson probably getting a start at right tackle, I just feel like people had this uneasy feeling, and they probably need that calming. See, what I would take, like, in the greatest day ever on Sunday would be the touchdown drive to start the game and a strip sack or a big defensive edge rusher play to end the game for us, right?
Yeah.
How cool would that be?
100%. Maybe we go out and score, take it right down the field. I want to see Michael Penix hit the intermediate throws. I think that'll be a big indicator for me, but nonetheless. Hey, before we get to wake-up call, have you guys seen the video of, I think it's Framber Valdez, the Houston Astros pitcher from yesterday that looks like he hits his catcher on purpose and crosses him up with a pitch?
I have not.
So there's some kind of miscommunication between the catcher and Valdez as he's pitching. He gives up a home run. And then, like, the next batter or a few batters later, he gets a sign and then throws a fastball, 93, right at the catcher's chest, and he's not expecting it. And you can tell, by the way, he immediately turns around, doesn't even acknowledge the fact that he just hit the catcher. He turns around and kind of looks out towards center field. And the catcher, like, peers back at him and gets a ball from the umpire and kind of throws it back to him and looks at him like, did you just do that on purpose? Mm-hmm. And the hitter, even, that was up to bat, I don't know who it was, but was like looking at him like, dude, you definitely just did that on purpose. This is crazy. Let me just say this. And I didn't, you know, play baseball at a high level, played in high school. That is a cardinal sin. Like, if I'm a catcher and a pitcher crosses me up on purpose and throws 93 off my chest, we're going to the clubhouse immediately after that inning. And I thought the catcher did a nice job of kind of not airing it out on the field at the moment. He just kind of swallowed his words. We're throwing hands. And I mean immediately once we get off the field, dude.
Well, that's probably and we can talk to Grant. Next time we talk to Grant, we can bring this up. That's probably a kangaroo court session right there. You know, that's the whole thing in the locker room. They had the kangaroo court. If it's not already settled, but I mean, that'll be probably hashed out tonight before the game. Like, that'll be a kangaroo court thing, because
I just can't. And Framber Valdez came out afterwards and denied doing it.
Right.
I can't imagine, though, even in kangaroo court, even with my teammates judging me, I can't imagine ever, if I'm that catcher, ever volunteering to ever catch him again.
And I would probably be. I mean,
yeah, it's his job to look at the signals and not hit me with 93 in the chest.
No, I get it, but
what if it had gone off his face mask?
Okay, well, that's why you wear it.
Okay, then what if he's concussed?
Okay, well, then kick his ass the next time you're out of concussion protocol. I mean,
so this, like, what
you
is
you can't the, just not play ball with a guy. And that's how you. I mean, I don't.
I'm telling them to cut him. Like, dude, you can't do that.
They're not cutting.
I can't think of a worse teammate cardinal sin in baseball. I can't think of.
I'm not taking up for Valdez. I just think
sounds like it.
Okay. All right. Fine. not taking up for him. I'm just saying you're not. I'm never going to play with you again. I mean, that's the ultimate take your ball and
go home. What's the finding of the kangaroo court?
Well, I don't know. I've never been in kangaroo court, but I'm sure maybe he has to carry his bags for the next week on the road or something. Maybe he has to pay a fine. I mean, you've been in more professional locker rooms as a player than I have.
Yeah, what do you think would be a way to solve that and get, squash it? Because they are in a situation where he's going to have to catch for him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. That's kind of my point. My question is, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't think there is anything that a pitcher would be able to do for me if I'm that catcher. Okay, I can't think of anything that I would feel okay about after that.
Yeah.
Of saying, all right, if you do this, I feel good about where we're at. Like, nah, man, like that ship has sailed.
Okay, well, if Matt is at the line of scrimmage and he calls a protection change and you don't hear it or you misunderstand it, right?
Okay.
And you get a helmet logo basically or a red spot where his chest used to be.
Sure.
Because you messed up. You think is Matt going to tell, whoever Mike Smith, get him out. He sucks. Get him out. I'm not playing with him on the line anymore. No. Like, that's not what you have a conversation. Like, dude, what the F?
But I think we're talking about two different things.
That was accidental.
He's accidental. I'm talking about, like, if I'm the right tackle and I'm, let's just say a lot. That's what the whole conversation is. He definitely did it on purpose.
He comes out
afterwards and says he doesn't, but he definitely does.
How do we know it led to that? Maybe he told the catcher, I'm not throwing that ball, it'll lead to something, and then the catcher calls it anyways, and did they go with it, and it led to that, and he's like, well, I'm not gonna listen to you anymore.
Even if that was the case, you still don't cross the catcher up on purpose and throw 93 out.
That would be the
thing you're talking about as far as blocking would be if Elijah Wilkinson lined up against Hassan Reddick on Sunday and just goes, you know what? I don't like Michael Penix. He threw an interception two quarters ago. I'm just going to get him absolutely killed.
Kind of like a movie we talked about earlier today, Remember the Titans. That happened in Remember the Titans.
Tight end didn't block.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got Rev hurt.
There you go. Sunshine
came in.
That's exactly what could have happened to the Astros catcher. All right, Dylan, let's hit this thing. 404-726-0929 if you guys want to weigh in on the wake-up call, man. And it is just a broad range of topics. absolutely broad range of topics today, as always, man. But let's go ahead and go straight to the phone lines. Welcome in our good buddy Anthony from Covington. Anthony, what's going on this morning?
Good morning. Fearless leader, how are we doing this morning?
Good, sir. Are you?
Doing well. The queen of the morning shift, Mrs. Allie Mack. How we doing, ma'am?
Wonderful. How about you?
Living the dream, ma'am. And Mike Honcho himself. How we doing, sir?
I love that.
Oh, forget me.
Wait. Yeah! I love
good
it.
Good morning. We're having a great morning this morning. I've had two shots of the W Sauce Fire Shower to get my morning going. I'm telling you what, all right, on Sunday, this is what I want to see, right? We've been begging for it. There's almost been a mandate from this fan base for years, right? I think in a perfect world, this is pipe dreams, but just hear me out. James Pierce Jr. on one edge, Jalen Walker on the other. James Pierce comes around the corner, strip sack. Jalen Walker scoops, scores, touchdown. The top would come off
the
fence if that happened, but that's what I want to see. We want to see this defense improve. I have full faith and confidence that this offense will move the football, but I need to see. Show me, right? You drafted all these defensive players, put it on the field, give us a good product. Give me an average defense at best. For the love of God, please give me a
appreciate
defense.
The phone call. Appreciate
get the
phone call,
on
Anthony.
The ground.
I think he's right. The top would blow off that joint.
Yeah.
If you're taking a Baron Burton's product for a pick me up to start of the morning, I would go to the Everyday Hot Sauce myself. Because that stuff will take the top off of you.
All right, mix that in with your espresso. You really want to light things on fire.
Oh, geez.
Hey, let's go. let's go back to the phone lines. Hopefully, I'm getting his name right because I've been butchering everything. Let's go to Justin from Danielsville. Hopefully, that's the right one. Yeah. What's up, man?
What's up, lady and gentlemen? How's it going?
Good, man. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. So I got, yes, baby, I see you. So I've got the wife and four kids under eight. So laundry is never done and the dishes are never done.
God bless
I don't know.
You.
I don't know which one is worse. Probably laundry. But
you can't pick one, I guess, in
which
your situation.
One Wednesday, yeah. Baby.
And as far as for the Falcons, I want four sacks. I want four sacks this game.
Like,
I want Baker on the ground.
Let's go.
And if I can go back to the Brian Kelly and Dabo thing, I can't stand either one of these guys. Both of these guys say some of the weirdest and dumbest things I've ever seen head coaches say.
Appreciate the phone call, Justin. Tend to agree with him. Four sacks this weekend? Come on. Like, let's go.
I don't think anybody would be upset with that.
No. Let's try to get one more phone call in. Let's go to Evan over in Johns Creek. Evan, hope you're having a good Wednesday.
Hey, good morning, Allie, Mike, Bo, Dylon, good morning.
Let's
I just want to start by saying real quick, y'all make my morning, and I'm sure a lot of people's mornings every morning, so I just want to say I appreciate y'all for that.
Thank you, sir.
As far as tasks in the house that I would not like to do, I'm with y'all, it's laundry all day, every day. Keep me away from laundry, I'll mow the grass, I'll do anything else you need me to do, just keep me away from the laundry. Right? That's fair. And then as far as the Falcons go, for this Sunday, obviously the obvious answer, as everybody else has said, defense comes first. That's point blank, period. But I'm going to play devil's advocate because we have not seen Michael Penix at all. I would love to see him go out on that first drive and get a touchdown, just because a lot of people think he's going to come out a little bit slow. So I would love to see that as well. And one last thing, I'm sorry, I know I'm rambling, but Mike, there's a Hard Knocks rookie film, The Best of Hard Knocks Rookies, on YouTube. And the Falcons segment, you're on there. And I think you should look at it if you haven't already. It's really enjoyable. It's funny. It might give you some good memories. That's all I got for y'all. I really appreciate y'all.
I appreciate the phone call, man. I'm scared to even see what's on that YouTube clip, to be honest with you.
Why?
We'll see. I don't know. I can't imagine what that is, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, that was
I don't think I would have been a rookie in there.
No, you weren't. You were making fun of somebody, I'm sure.
Was it?
Maybe you're just sitting in the crowd. I mean, I'm sure they had the singing.
Probably so.
I don't think you were in the hot tub when LaVine was playing the ukulele or whatever.
No, I wasn't there for that.
Yeah.
Could have been.
Sure, you're upset.
I don't know. About what?
Hey, you weren't in the hot tub playing the ukulele.
It's probably like, hey, man, you got any headphones? Plug them things in and go somewhere else.
Well, this hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Coming up, who is the X factor on the Falcons defense? We will weigh that out next. And we've got a life of squid.
My good friend Michael Wilbon went on a rant about the hype machine of in sports overall, but mainly college football. And I couldn't have said it better myself. I'll let you hear it next. Morning Shift, Sports Radio 929 The Game and
the Odyssey app. It is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan at 8:24. Before we get to the Falcons home opener on Sunday, keep in mind, Sports Radio 929 The Game is your home of live college football coverage in Atlanta this Saturday at 8 a.m. We get the day started with College Football Game Time, brought to you by Window Nation. Visit windownation.com. John Fricke, Chris Goforth, Abe Gordon, and Garrett Chapman will set the stage for all of the big matchups. And then we have a triple header of games, starting with Iowa at Iowa State at noon, followed by Oklahoma State at Oregon and Michigan at Oklahoma. That's all this Saturday on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But then we get to Sunday. We got the Falcons home opener. Bucks are in town. And there's been a lot of talk about the Falcons' defense that we need them to show out this weekend. I think it was Justin that said he wanted four sacks. Who do you think is the X factor on this defense?
I'm going to try not to hit the low-hanging fruit here.
What's your low-hanging fruit?
James Pierce.
All right. I would like to say a position over one. But you know what? I'll take a different type of bait. A.J. Terrell.
Okay.
Because he's gonna be primarily on Mike Evans. At least, you know, that's kind of the way they play it. And look, Mike Evans is a guy that just goes off on Atlanta. I mean, he goes off on everybody. The guy's got what? He's entering his 12th year, 11 straight years of 1,000 yards. Against Atlanta alone, he's got 97 catches for 1,469 and 13 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty big deal. So, as much There's so many answers you can go with. You could say Cade Nellis. You could say Devon Diablo with covering White and Irvin out of the backfield.
That's probably a good one. I think my definition of X Factor, though, is like somebody who, if they play well, it's going to be like it's going to change everything. And if they don't play well, it's going to make me feel sick in my stomach.
Okay, well.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like I know what A.J. Terrell is either way. And I feel like I know what Cade Nellis is either way. Devon Diablo kind of fits in that category where it's like, okay, he's about to be unveiled to us. I feel like if James Pierce comes out and gets dominated the entire game by Luke Gedecky and whoever our guy's name is, is it Huck? That's the backup left tackle. I'm going to be sad about that.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, that's gonna hurt.
I would tell you, if A.J. has an off day and Mike Evans goes off, you're going to notice it, and it's going to be bad. Now, it's going to be coupled with what happens up front. And that's the thing that's why up front, so we talk about how good Jesse Bates is, and you know, A.J., since Jesse's been here, and since A.J.'s career, they've never had a dominant pass rush in front of them.
No.
And – imagine if James Pierce Jr. goes out there. But, yeah, I don't even know which side James Pierce. Of course, you'd mention it. You did say with the preference, Gedecky and Heck, you know, whichever side Pierce is on going against him. But it's fair. I just think there's so many unknowns on what the reps and the rotation is going to look like for the edge, four edge guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Leonard Floyd has a chance to change things up for whoever's on the opposite him.
Yeah,
right?
And I'd be curious how they kind of deploy him as well. Like, I don't see him, at least what we've seen, like just these obvious passing downs. Does he get a crack at that? You know what I mean? Or is he more of the, what was our guy's name here that was the outside linebacker 2 years ago? That was Bud Dupree, the run stuffing kind of guy. I think they would like to have Floyd lined up opposite tight ends. I think that they would love to go that route as well. So we'll see how that all pans out. But, I don't know, man. I just think that when I say Pierce, and I mean the X Factor, it's like it could be good, could be bad. We don't know. We don't really know.
Is it wrong for me to think that based on personnel, if it looks like a run fit personnel, not that it will be, but just the way that the look they get based on only who's in the game when they they're changing out, that they'll put Walker and Ebukadi on the field together, and that if it looks more like a pass rush kind of, and again, it's hard. I get it. I know. Yeah, I don't think so. I tend to think it's going to be that they like it enough that they'll be like 3 to 4 snaps here and then in and out.
What's the down and distance we're talking?
I don't know. We're looking at 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6. You got Irvin in the game with, Keith will be their backup, right? I think he'll be the guy who gets in. I think maybe it's Durham. Durham went off on us the last year, remember? But you got Ebuka, Evans, and Sterling Shepard. Have I named enough players? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
Who's in that? What rotation with the Falcons?
Well, what I was gonna say is I think the X factor in this situation is, because we've seen Zach Harrison move around a little bit, can you line him up opposite a tight end and go with a 5-man front? But I don't know that that works in 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6. That's still, you could still run the ball if you're them and get some stuff done. But I think if it's like, if it's goal line, you know, give me those three, Laquelle London, some of those big bodies in the middle. Give me, give me Zach Harrison outside and give me Floyd, like 5-man front right across the bow. Little double eagle, little bear front. Give me that. That's what I want to see. I'm curious to see how they'll go about that, because they just don't seem to have different bodies than they did last year. But who knows?
I hope Dave Archer's in his car right now.
Yeah?
I just made his head explode with, like, I walked through who's on the field. I know he's, like, screaming at his radio right now. I said earlier, the Baron Burton's Everyday Hot Sauce, if you need a pick-me-up in the morning, you're feeling a little tired, a little drowsy, just take a quick swig of that, walk out the door. That'll kickstart your heart. All right. I complained yesterday about the hate for Arch Manning, and I complained Friday about the hype for Arch Manning. I kept, everybody says he's a savior.
Yeah.
A guy, a long time, I wasn't even getting paid yet, and I reached out to a guy named Michael Wilbon. You guys familiar with Michael Wilbon?
Sure, of course.
PTI, ESPN.
That's a legend.
And he responded immediately and was the nicest person ever to me, and I used to book him all the time on all the shows I produce. He's literally an amazing human being. Always been so good to me. He went on a rant that was Squidbilly-esque, if I can go third person. And I agree with everything he said, as long as Dylan cut it up right.
I don't want mass media, major media, networks, including people that we like to call our friends, to just ruin the watching of college football for me, the consumption of college football, by exaggerating the hell out of everything, by overstating everything. Arch Manning is not Peyton or Eli or Archie just yet. Let him simmer a little bit.
Let it percolate.
Let it happen. Jeremiah Smith. He is not Jerry Rice just yet. Can we just stop? The greatest weekend of, I mean, all of it is just slobbered over.
It was
over
a fabulous opening weekend in terms of games.
In terms of.
Yeah. And he even went on to say that, he said it in part of it, and Dylan did a good job cutting up, but that basically somebody, and I think it might have, I'm not sure who exactly he's talking about, but one of his colleagues basically, that Jeremiah Smith was. Like Jerry Rice-esque and the best wide receiver he's ever seen in college football. And college football as a whole. Like everything he said is spot on. We are so over the top. Everyone's one up in everybody with the next thing. And it's just it's a lot. Like and it creates the toxicity of social media, so to speak, with the hatred for players. It's been the whole thing with Shador and why people are so polarized with him. It's frustrating.
I completely agree with everything that both of you guys have just said. I will say, though, there is a sense of irony at the fact that this was said on ESPN. It's a little bit ironic to me that that's the source of the oversaturation for a lot of people. And for him to say that on the four-letter network, it was like, yeah, that's like your colleagues, man.
But remember, he did it on a show that pretty much just goes through and they do what we do in a similar format where they're like, story. And we talk about it for 90 seconds and they move on. Mm-hmm. And he's a sports writer. So I hear what you're saying. I mean, I heard Stephen A. Smith basically take credit for everyone on the network the other day about how everyone there is there because he wants them there. So I digress.
I mean, it sounds like the word of the day, everybody, is chill. Just chill. Well, coming up, we've got senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Pat Forty, will join us to talk all things college football. That is next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the
Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's the morning shift. It is 8:42, and we have talked a lot of stuff today, and we're going to talk even more right now because we're going to go right out to the phone lines and welcome in senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Mr. Pat Forty. Pat, I am a Bama alum, and I am going to make the statement that Bama fans had the worst weekend and feel the worst after this weekend. Anybody else even come close to Alabama fans of feeling bad after this weekend?
North Carolina. I mean,
oh yeah,
they just paid Bill Belichick $10 million to come in and absolutely flop in his first game. I mean, yeah, Alabama fans should feel bad, no doubt about it. But given the anticipation around what Belichick was supposed to deliver there and what he did deliver, whew, that was a massive flop.
Pat, with Texas and Bama looking the way they did over the weekend, is Georgia still the cream of the crop for the SEC?
We'll see. You know, I mean, I always wait until you've seen somebody play another Power Four team before really deciding, you know, the full hierarchy on things. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, from that standpoint, I'd put LSU as the cream of the crop right now because they went to Death Valley and won against, a Power Four opponent there. But if you're Georgia, you're sitting there saying, I'm not scared of Alabama and I'm not scared of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Texas. And I would feel good about Georgia's situation where they are. I thought, from what I saw bits and pieces of the game, Gunnar Stockton played well, did exactly what they probably hoped he would do. The defense looks really good again, and I'd be pretty happy right now if I were a Georgia fan.
Pat Forty joining us here on the morning shift. Pat, like what happened in Texas, in Ohio, in Columbus, I guess I should say, with Ohio State and Texas, with Arch, is he been, I mean, look, there's no doubt he's been overhyped, but has it been, you know, over-projected how good he can be? Or is that opening start a little bit of a combination between how good Ohio State's defense is and how Sark kind of didn't help him out in any way, shape, or form with the play calling?
Yeah, you know, I think there were probably multiple factors involved, and I think the last couple things you said there probably are the biggest. I was at Ohio State practice mid-August, and the defense totally dominated, and it shocked me. I was like, oh, my gosh, Ohio State's offense is terrible. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's just Ohio State's defense is really good, and their secondary is excellent. But what's really impressed me, they've got new guys on the front line that are playing extremely well. So I think Ohio State reloaded extremely well. I think hiring Matt Patricia was a master stroke, and that unit looks really, really good. Also, I agree that I think Sark called a just strangely bad game. I just don't understand, you know, what he was trying to do with Arch there. You know, I thought they tried. All right, the first play of the game was a little waggle roll, and you got, you know, multiple layers of guys going crossing the field. That's a pretty easy play, and he just didn't handle that well. That was a bad throw. And then after that, I thought they gave him a bunch of hard plays, and he really didn't do well with those and seemed confused by the defense that he was looking at. And so then I'm thinking, when are they going to run him? When are they going to just get him some bubble screens to just get him going? And it took him a long time to do that. And by then, I think, you know, the Ohio State was fully confident, and Texas was starting to panic. And then I thought Sark called a bad game in the red zone, too.
Well, I do want to pull on the Arch Manning thread a little bit longer because, you know, he had a few bright spots late in the game. What do you expect out of him the rest of the season?
Yeah, I'm certainly not giving up on Arch by any stretch. I think one game against a good opponent on the road is not the time to do that. And it did actually remind me, because it's going back a ways, obviously, but like John Elway, when he was a rookie in the NFL, he had a ton of bad games to start, and he just looked like he wasn't going to figure it out. And then when he figured it out, hey, became one of the great quarterbacks in history. Joe Montana at Notre Dame would be terrible for three quarters and then pull out games in the fourth, and that was what Arch almost did. So, you know, if you give him more of an old school learning curve instead of, you know, the modern day expectation of, well, his name is Manning and he's 20 years old, he's going to be brilliant. I still think he's going to be a very good quarterback. Now, you know, we got to see it. Obviously his accuracy was puzzling to me. It was bad, especially on the crossing routes, both directions. But I, you know, that guy didn't have as many people recruiting him as hard as he did if he can't play.
Pat, we do this thing on Wednesday called Which One Wednesday, where we throw a couple of options out and we make a decision. I want you to go back to Friday with me, if you will. We've talked a lot about Georgia Tech. Obviously, we're in the city of Atlanta. But I thought Auburn had a good day as well. Which one of those teams on Friday do you think should be the happiest about the way they look, Georgia Tech or Auburn?
Well, definitely both of them, because those were great wins and pretty dominant wins once Georgia Tech stopped fumbling the ball. Yeah. But I would go with Auburn, because they started the season with Hugh Freeze on a hot seat. I wasn't sold as John Jackson Arnold as a quarterback, SEC caliber quarterback, but they stepped up and won that game on the road and pretty well controlled it throughout. So against a team that some people thought could win the Big 12. So I thought that was a really impressive performance there. Still got to show me they can throw the ball a little bit better, but a great, great start for Auburn.
Pat, I don't know if you saw it, but Mike Gundy kind of called out Oregon with the amount of money they spend, and then Dan Lanning fires back. What? And then, you know, in the same day, Brian Kelly takes a shot at Dabo. Why are coaches suddenly just taking shots across the bow at each other almost like they were in a professional boxing or UFC arena.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that, doesn't it? I mean, it is interesting that it's become a mouthy profession, which is good for our business, I guess.
That's true.
but it's fascinating. Gundy always has something to say. And the hilarious thing with Gundy, you know, like, oh, they're spending so much money, we don't have any. Is he familiar with T. Boone Pickens, whose name is on everything at that school and built everything Gundy wanted and the other coaches wanted for a long time? I mean, Oklahoma State would perhaps have the facilities of a American Athletic Conference school if not for one guy who gave him a lot of money. Well, Phil Knight's given Oregon a lot of money. Congratulations to them. Instead of sitting around complaining about it, go find a new T. Boone Pickens. That's what I would say to Gundy. So, you know, it is fascinating to listen to these guys, though, bicker back and forth.
Well, I want to talk a little bit further, too, Pat. I know we only got you for a couple more minutes. The whole Dabo at Clemson thing, and I asked you starting off, you know, who should feel the worst, but I will say this. There seems to be a feeling amongst Clemson fans that there's, like, nothing you can do about it. Obviously, Dabo's not going anywhere, but they've had a hard time winning games like this, in the past few years, and that dynasty of theirs seems to be, you know, something from the past.
Yeah, and it's basically his program building is something from the past. I know that, you know, there was a small to-do made because they brought in like four transfers, one of whom played and played well in that game, but he still hasn't really embraced the transfer philosophy. I didn't really love Clemson coming into this season anyway. Some people wanted to pick him number one. I thought that was crazy. If you looked at their season last year, they lost to every good team they played except SMU in the ACC championship, who they beat on a 56-yard field goal on the last play. Otherwise, they were pretty soundly beaten by everybody. South Carolina was close, but that lost that at home. Louisville handled them at home. Georgia dominated them. Texas beat them easily. So I didn't look at that team and say, oh, they're all going to suddenly be way better and be capable of competing for a national championship. And they looked kind of like I thought they would look in that game. So, you know, a loss to LSU is by no means disqualifying. They could still end up winning the ACC. But I do think that Clemson's best days remain behind them until proven otherwise. And I'm not sure they have the formula to get back there.
Well, based on that, kind of going off that real quick, Florida State or Miami, I'll say this, Florida State, Miami, or Georgia Tech, which one's the biggest threat to Clemson for the ACC title? After week one,
I think Miami. I was impressed just with defensively and the way Carson Beck fit in there. I thought they looked quite good most of the game. They seized up a little bit in the fourth quarter, but I'm going to give Notre Dame credit for that. But they were the hungrier team, and then they executed when they had to. So I think what Miami showed was what everybody needed to see from Miami going into this season. They're tougher. They're still super athletic. Looks like they're going to be able to move the ball and score. Defense looks great. And I would put them at the top of the ACC class right now. But I was super impressed with Florida State as well.
He is senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Mr. Pat 40. You can find him on the X at @ByPat40. Always appreciate it, man. Hopefully we can catch up again soon.
All right, my pleasure.
Good stuff.
Thanks, Pat.
I was hoping he would go any other direction other than Bama fans should probably feel the worst. Mm. I was trying to set him up. I was like, man, is anybody else out there? I'm glad he, you know, sprinkled in UNC. And I tend to agree with him, but I'm not sure what UNC fans' expectations actually were going into the year.
Well, if you saw the crowd, it was a lot more than what they got Monday night.
Yeah.
And did you see the press conference? Did you see a picture from the press conference?
No.
All right, I want you right now. I know you say you're not quick on it. Google right now. Bill Belichick press conference. His press conference looked like the backdrop for, or his whole thing, the setting looked like a setting for a picture at a prom. It looked like maybe the UNC spring formal or something. They had
what's the deal with the balloons?
Well, that's what happens when you let your 24-year-old girlfriend run everything.
Do you think she had a hand in that?
Hell yes, I do. Abso-freaking-lutely. We should have asked Pat about that. I don't know if he'd have went there. That's the one thing I like about Pat Forty is you ask him a question and he'll go there. Like he has an opinion on it. He's read up on it.
But this is so ridiculous.
It looks like
this is so ridiculous.
Does it like a spring formal or some kind of prom or something?
It looks like a kid's birthday party.
What's going on here?
It looks like a kid's birthday party.
Yeah,
that is. Dude, were the silver blow-up stars necessary?
I know.
What are we doing?
That's what I'm saying.
Jesus.
I can't believe you. How have you not seen this?
Why are we just now talking about this at 8:54?
Because it's the first time we brought up Bill Belichick all morning, I think.
Oh, my gosh. No, there is a part of me that, you know, if you're – I know because I know that both these guys are in the crowd, Michael Jordan, Roy Williams, and you're looking at this going – what are we doing, man?
Well, it's just this guy. This guy's asked in the pregame interview with Holly Rowe, Coach, you had to go with a short sleeve hoodie. Yeah. It's kind of my thing. And this guy's got like birthday prom balloons at his press conference. You're like, he had nothing to do with that. There's no male that would have had anything to do. Yeah. With balloons like that. I mean, come on, dude. Like, that was Jordan all the way.
Oh, my God. Put the silver ones in there, too. I just saw those. The silver ones have got to be in there. I just saw them. Include those two.
Dude, the name Jordan is a name that school's fan base has loved for decades. They're going to grow to not like it because of her.
Seriously. Well, week two, the saga will continue. This hour has been brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. We got to get out of here. For Mike, Bo, Dylan, and myself, Allie Mack, thanks for being here today. Bo is sticking around with the Steakhouse, so you hang with them next on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. And don't forget to
stay cool, Atlanta.